when there was nothing around the arena but rice paddies, and stood alone, patiently waiting for its occupants to gather, to witness a weekday winter weather evening event. Like spring, it seems the city bloomed when the season begins, with illuminating energy that lit up the valley. It was made hot and stayed hot, pretty precision passes, to look or to look not, with a sign held high that read, Pistol Pete is alive, number 55, while Jason Williams waved his wands, weaving through willow trees, with the rock on a wire, hardwood wizardry. What king shall be remembered more than C. Webb the Fourth, beasting, big buckets, bearing down.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Welcome. This is Sharon Smith, and this is Iambic Poetry Podcast. And I'm here with the man, the legend, the poet, the comedian, the entertainer, dancer. I mean, you got so many things on you, man. I call you the jack of all trades. I'd like to give you Russell Cummings. Woo!
Yeah, radio air horn. Bam, 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 bam.
What up, guy? How you been?
Man, I'm just trying to survive and help others, man. That's it.
Most definitely. Well, I'm glad you came on here and everything because I've been meaning to talk to you. I mean, it was long overdue, but I've been meaning to talk to you and stuff about your journey, about you, about, I mean, just getting into their mindset because you got a lot. You're like a chameleon in this business and stuff. So I just wanted to talk to you and stuff. And first of all, I want to know, tell me about where you're from. What's the origin of Russell Cummings?
Yeah, man. So first off, yeah, we had kind of confirmed this kind of before the Rona, right? So yeah, it's been a long time coming, but I'm glad we're able to link up, and I'm glad that you thought of me, that you know, have me on your podcast, family. So I always want to support.
No doubt.
So I come from Sacramento, man. 916. I come from Del Paso Heights. Like my whole family is from the Heights or like went to Grant and whatnot. So yeah, I come from the Heights. My mom and them used to actually live in Long Beach. I'm a Laker fan. So they actually live in Long Beach, but they moved to Sacramento before I was born. So born and raised here. And I've been here for most of my life, but I've left a couple times. You know, I went to Grambling State University in Louisiana. I got a couple degrees from there. And then I also went to the SoCal area for about a year or so, did some comedy and stuff out there as well.
So let's go that for you. So I didn't know you were from, I didn't know you went to Grambling and stuff. Wow. What'd you major?
Yeah. So I went to Grambling, Louisiana in 2003, man. I had a double major of marketing and management. And it's funny because I started off like as a math major and accounting major. But accounting is just not my style. You know me. And try to, you know, fix the budget, and equal up the budget. You know, those double lines at the bottom of the accounting pages used to drive me crazy because it's so monotonous. It's just numbers. But I'm really, really good with numbers. I'm really good at math. When I was younger, I won math competitions and scholarships and things because of my math scores and my math teacher's praise. So I was like, I should be a mathematician. But like I said, with math, it's a lot of numbers. There's some cool things that could be, I could have been like a rocket scientist or something, but I just needed to deal more with people and art and, kind of creativity. But yeah. I went to Grambling. It was a wonderful experience, bro. In the middle of Louisiana, the middle of nowhere, you know what I'm saying? In between Monroe and Shreveport. So, you know, holla at the 318 for anybody out there. It's just a real country, real small town. The people country, but they good people. The food is good, and it's just all blackness, man. All blackness. Everybody black. The police is black. The teachers are black. The cafeteria workers are black. It's just all blackness. It was an amazing experience.
So from you coming from California, going there, that must have been a real I know you hang out with a lot of black people, but I'm saying that must have been a real kind of a overdue of, oh, my black people are here. Just basically a lot of a lot of inspiration or feeling for being around that many Black people, right?
Yeah, it was a huge culture shock, man. It's a huge culture shock because not only is it all Blackness, it's a smaller town, it's a slower town. All they have is like the Walmart, that's like the main spot to go to. And so it's a huge, huge culture shock. But it's also, I used to say, you get indoctrinated in Blackness. It's also an education in Blackness and in our culture, because we were able to really kind of get in tune with a lot of things that you don't really hear of or know about, celebrate here in California.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so it was a great opportunity, man. And like I said, I was indoctrinated in Blackness and in the culture. And then the culture in the South is just a little different than in California. So it was a culture shock in a good way. And it was the best thing about going to a HBCU is to learn so much, be around my people. And I wouldn't kind of change that. Even if I can go to a, you know, a better ranked school or quote unquote ranked school or prestigious, I think the experience you get as a Black person, especially from California, not from the South, you're able to go there and soak that up. I think that's priceless. This is very valuable for me specifically.
So basically you got a different perspective on things. Cause I know a lot of Southerners, when they see California, you know, West Coast or even New Yorkers come down, they kind of get a little bit like, whoa, you real different. The vibe's different from their perspective because they're used to their, you know, the way people talk, the way people act, and the way people think and all that, right?
Yeah, no, the vibes are way different. And it's funny that you brought that up, man. So you also get to experience, like I said, when I say Blackness, it's not just the South. Like there's people from New York that went to my school because my school is a prestigious HBCU. It's very popular. Bill Clinton visited and Beyonce used my school with Coachella and other visuals and things like that. So it's one of those places that there's going to be Black students from across the country. So one of my best friends, rest in peace, my homie Rox, he was from New York, and some of my best friends are from Chicago, because a lot of times the city folk will kind of link together. Even from different cities, you are a faster paced city guy. So you'll link with Chicago, New York, and really learn their culture as well. You know what I'm saying? Back in the day, oh, yeah, yeah, it's Chicago, you know, and all the little things they do and how they stack their fists and call everybody Joe. And, you know, those are things that I would have never been able to experience, or especially genuinely, like from those people, you know?
Right. So from coming back and stuff, did it also change your perspective too, coming back to Sacramento, or did you go somewhere else for a little bit and then come back after you left college?
No, I came right back and it did change my perspective. I'm a lot more appreciative. A lot of people say, you know, there's nothing to do in Sacramento. No, I was in the middle of Louisiana. There's stuff to do in Sacramento. You know, it's funny about it too. We were near Folsom the other day. And there was a bunch of white folk that came from different places, you know, around Sacramento to come to Sacramento to river raft and do all the aquatic things at the aquatic center. But also there's a lot more that we have that people don't understand because they live here and they don't get out and about. But yeah, so it made me appreciate Sacramento more. And also this is a story I tell often. When you're in HBCU environment, you don't feel Black. You just feel like a person because everything around you is similar to you and Black, and it, you know, you're not foreign or you're not a minority. So the minute you fly back, like you could feel it like in the airport, because our airport is very, very multicultural, you know, in Sacramento. Sacramento is a very multicultural place. So as soon as you get off the plane, you feel like a Black guy. Right. So in school, I just felt like a person. As soon as you get back, you feel like a Black guy. So you're just way more cognizant of all the different cultures and races and how they interact and how you feel about them when you're back here in California in general, especially in Sacramento, being such a mixed, diverse place.
Right. So all the little things I've heard about you is like, you used to be a dancer. So what's the deal with that?
I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that you knew that. I was surprised when you threw that in the intro, man. I like that. You did your homework, family. I like that.
So what got you into dancing? I mean, but tell me about that.
You know, it's funny. Dancing is an important part of my life. People don't even realize this. I get so offended when I tell people I'm a dancer and they like question it. I'll be like, what? Does it look like I don't have rhythm or what? But I was a professional dancer, family. So I used to dance for the Sacramento hip hop crew out of Arco Arena. So that means we're dancing for the Sacramento Kings, NBA, Monarchs. We even had a soccer team. We had an indoor soccer team called the Knights, and they were very good. And I know that because we danced in like the semifinals, you know, semi-championship. We won that. So they were very good at that back in the day. And anything that came through Arco Arena, basically, we would be the dance team or the hip hop crew. And then we also did things like throughout the community, any festivals, we were there. But then we also got big enough to fly to North Carolina, and I won a gold medal and a silver medal at the Junior Olympics in hip hop dance. So we did so much. And that's what really taught me how to perform.
Damn, I didn't know that. That's new information.
Because I'm dancing in front of thousands of people. A lot of times people ask if I'm nervous when I do comedy in front of 70 people or when I do poetry in front of 55 people. Yeah, I mean, a little bit because I have to talk. But at the same time, I've danced in a packed Arco Arena when the Kings were very good. We had Chris Webber and all that. You know what I'm saying? Right. I'm at Time Balance throwing T-shirts with Chris Webber and whatnot. So that's what really taught me to perform. One of the biggest things I see that young performers don't do is don't let them know that you messed up or the show must go on. So a lot of times people will mess up and they'll be dramatic about it. But when you dance, you realize maybe they're not looking at you or maybe they didn't realize that you messed up. That was one of the little tokens that I got and gems that I got from dancing. And then just to be on point and practice, we have to practice a lot more in dancing. Just the production of dancing is a lot more complicated and a lot more intricate than poetry or comedy. I always kind of laugh at a poetry show because, you know, you do a poetry show and the people doing the show don't even show up till 20 minutes after the show started, you know? But with dance, you got to rehearsal, dress rehearsal. You got to rehearse in the space. We went to Arco Arena when no one was there during the day and rehearsed, and you got to get your spots. Lighting and just so much costume changes, and so that really taught me how to be a performer, and that's why I'm so comfortable on stage now, you know.
Right. Well,
I'm so long-winded, man. I apologize. I didn't even answer your question. I got started Sid Twilla and the team. They actually came to my school. They came to school in Northern Sacramento, and they put on these recitals with the kids at the school. So we had a show during the daytime, then we had a show at night for the parents, and it was just this program that they ran at the school, right? So they would choose the best kids from those school recitals, and then they would ask you to audition for their company. And their company was the best of the best who we did all the paid gigs. So that's how it actually started with Sid Twilla and the Sacramento Hip Hop Group.
It was just that you got grown up and then you had to go to school, had to go to Gremlin. That's why you stopped doing it, or was just something that
just no, I mean, I stopped doing it for a couple of reasons, like girls and money and, you know, just growing up. So I would be really busy, bro, in high school. I would dance for the Kings at night and get home at like 11 or whatnot and then get up and go to school. But then I might have to go to work or I might have basketball practice or football practice. So it was just so much that I was doing that eventually dancing went by the wayside around junior year in high school when I could really work. I wanted money. I didn't get a lot of money from my parents. I worked for my stuff, you know? So I would work. I would want clothes. And basically, I just ended up, you know, doing basketball or football and working and couldn't do all three, you know?
Most definitely. Most definitely. So you also went to play basketball and football in high school?
Yeah, I was better in football. I played a little basketball, but I played football for the most part all 4 years. And then I also worked. So, man, like I would go right from football practice to work. And I worked at Chuck E. Cheese. I would dance as the mouse and whatnot, and go right to work, and then walk home at 12:30 at night. If you've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese, you know it takes a while to clean that up every night.
Are you the mascot? You were Chuck E.
I was the mascot, man. I remember I would, especially at black parties, I would do black dances and stuff, and start like the electric slide, and I would get tips. And I got a raise because I would, like, you know, just go above and beyond, because as the mascot, I could just bullshit and I wouldn't have to clean things. So I would just, you know, get in there sweaty and have fun instead of, you know, having to clean things and carry pizzas and all that. That's my very first job. That was my very first job, Chuck E. Cheese.
Okay. Okay. Did you always want to be a mascot, or?
Did you always want to be a mascot? No, I hate it, actually. I don't like to be hot, man. I don't like to sweat. You see on my shows, like, I make sure I don't want to sweat. It's fun, but I turn myself into the mask. You know what I'm saying? I don't like the outfit. Now I'm the mask. Just me.
Most definitely. Well, let's go into the poetry side of yourself. So here's $50 wonder. Do you slam? Or did you mostly start rapping first before you started to do poetry?
I've never slammed, because when I write poetry, I just write it for the poetry, or sometimes I write it as a commission piece and there's a theme and I just write it for that theme. I write it for that feeling. And I've never written a poem to beat someone else's poem. You know, I've never written a poem to get a score. And I've talked to people who slam, and I could just think about it, even before I was able to talk to them. You would write it differently. If you were writing for a score, you wouldn't necessarily write it the way I write. If I was writing things for a score, I would add things maybe more dramatic, maybe more deep, maybe more funny. And it wouldn't be my organic writing style. So, and then also one time I went to a slam. I forgot what it was. And some whack person got a better score than me. And I was done with that. At slams, they let the crowd, judge at some of these smaller slams. Now, national slams, okay, I don't know who judges, but at these smaller slams, you'll have crowd participant judging, and that doesn't make any sense. Like, you don't go to like a gymnastics routine and let those people judge it, because they don't know the intricate, you know, things about gymnastics. So right. When I'm using different literary, you know, devices and whatnot, and alliteration, this, that, and the third, and double entendres and rhymes within the rhyme, and somebody's doing something a little more basic, but they're talking about a subject that you like, that person will get a better score at times. And so that's not really my style. I really want to, you know, put my art into it. I mean, anybody can talk about, you know, love yourself, or black girl, love your hair, or we need fathers, or, you know, anyone could talk about that stuff. We've known that those are issues for years. So a lot of times those are the poems that might get a little bit more love. So I'm cool off slam. I started just with rapping and Def Poetry Jam and stuff like that. You know, 8 Mile came out, we'd rap all the time. And then Def Poetry came out, and then I would turn the raps into poetry at school and college, Grambling. And that's kind of when I started doing poetry.
Oh, so you did poetry in Grambling. Okay.
That's when I first really did. I wrote like one poem for this girl. For this girl named Monica in high school, I wrote a poem. But other than that, I really start performing in college. Yeah.
Okay. So what got you into being a mahogany host?
So when I came back, I did a lot as far as poetry goes and shows in college. I became one of those guys. We had a group called The Movement, and we throw our own open mics and whatnot. So when I came back, poetry was just a part of my life. And performing, obviously, I danced for a long time, then I did poetry. So performing was a part of my life that I wanted to get back into. My buddies, you know, didn't want to go. They just want to go to the club and get girls, not realizing poetry is one of the best ways they could do that. But so really what happened is I was a little bit more lonely. I stopped hanging out with the same guys. And me and my cousin went to this poetry gig that I think it was a slam or something that Kyrie Malik put on, and then we talked, and I started going to Mahogany. Now my demeanor, I talk, I make jokes. Like if I'm sitting in the crowd and things are happening that are funny, like I'll make a joke where the crowd can hear it and the rest of the crowd laughs. And I would do that a lot. And he just asked me after, you know, so many months or so of me coming and doing that. And, it, you know, I was just all about poetry for like the first year I got into the Sacramento scene. I hit it hard. I was always at Luna's or Mahogany or Soul. And yeah, I just got better and became kind of a figure with it where he asked me to host when it was just him and Inside Eye. He asked me to be the third host. And it went from there, man.
Oh, okay. And you
six years ago, someone.
But just but you're still a host in the meat of the heat of everything and all that too, still. So that's always cool. So
yeah, I still host Mahogany now. I just don't host it every month because right. I have so many things to do and I want it to be like dope and special and a little bit more exclusive when I host. So I host Mahogany whenever there's five Wednesdays in a month. Anybody hearing this, just go to your phone's calendar. And on that Monday, if there's five Wednesdays, the fourth Wednesday is when I host. So if there's five Wednesdays, the fourth Wednesday is when I host. So go to that Monday and just put a reminder that Russell's hosting in a couple of days.
Most definitely. So you're part of ZFG.
Yes.
Okay. So
squat.
So I've talked to the man, Andrew. I've also talked to Agnes. So when did you get into ZFG?
I've been jamming ZFG since the beginning, man. I've been rocking with them. You know what I'm saying? Like all the numbers elude me. Like I should have like probably did some research on my own life before I talked to you. But same thing as maybe like 5 years ago. You know, vague kind of answers, but since the beginning, really, there was a time, like right when ZFG started doing the guerrilla poetry stuff, I was taking a break. A lot of times I will leave the public eye because I do so much. I'll leave for like the winter time or whatnot, or just leave for a few months and recharge and, you know, build up that exclusivity I was talking about. So when I came back, they had already done a very successful guerrilla night. Couple of them, and then I got right into that and supported. I always supported Microphone Mondays, always supported Drew and the whole squad, whatever they did. So it was just a natural fit. So basically from the beginning, you know, but I've been rocking with it stronger in the last 3 or 4 years because we've done more specific events. Intersection was amazing, Drunk Poetry was amazing, things like that have really grown the art community here in Sac.
Yeah, because Andrew applauds your guerrilla when we were doing poetry month, your guerrilla poetry version where they did it at the at a coffee shop, and you.
Oh, mine was at Tower Cafe.
Yeah,
we were super nervous that they were going to kick us out. I just got in there and spit, and they liked it. So, you know, mine was in Tower Cafe, yeah.
The little ants how we march, 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 the little ants that we are. Programmed to go with the program. Look alike, act alike, all in a straight line. The little ants how they march, the little ants how they march. And they surviving in the cracks, feasting off of scraps. Grind all day to find a meal, bring it back. The little ants how they march, the little ants how they march. You won't believe it when you see it, how hard they try for the system. How they risk their lives for the system. But they just little ants, who cares if they die for the system. The little ants how they march, the little ants how they march. And the little ants are making more little ants, so the little ants die, but the system stay alive.
Yeah, and he's always pointed that one out. I was like, yeah, when Russell spit in Tower Cafe, we thought we were gonna get kicked out, but he came out hard. They told him to do it again. I was like, what?
Yeah, we did it again. We snuck in there. We kind of distracted some people and snuck in there. And then I was loud. And you know, it's so funny that the first time I spit it, I killed it. The second time is what you guys see, right? And I feel like I did well, but I missed one of my favorite lines in the little ants poem, and I was like, no, it's one of my favorite lines. Their dependence is evident, you know what I'm saying? It's just a dope bar, but yeah, it was cool to get that reception. I did one in like a Raley's Bel Air, about Michelle Obama and about eating right. And we were all like in the snack aisle and the candy aisle and shit. And it was super dope. And the security guard started following us. And he threw me off because he's following us because he stopped me halfway through the poem. So same thing. The one you guys see is the second one where I'm trying to rush it. I'm nervous. So, you know, it is what it is. Guerrilla poetry. It's not always going to be perfect in those situations. But it's definitely fun to shoot and share with people. People look at me crazy doing poetry about snacks and shit in Safeway.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So let's go. So you went to Southern California. What part of Southern California were you living in?
I live in Ventura. I live in Ventura County. It was dope. Kind of in between Santa Barbara and LA area, all on the coast.
So you're also doing comedy out there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I started really like doing comedy out there because I would always do comedy. I mean, ever since I first started with poetry and they gave me a microphone, I would always say funny things either in my poetry or in between my poetry. So, you know, if you've seen one of my features, I'm going to try to make it like a set. You know what I'm saying? I'm not doing the poetry and I'm trying to make it a thing and it's funny and it's lively. So I've always, you know, been a comedian in my life, but there it was so funny. There's not a lot of black people in Ventura and I'm so pro-black and I just love blackness like what we talk about. So I was at the 24 Hour Fitness and there was a couple of black dudes in the jacuzzi. I was swimming or whatnot and they were talking about this open mic and they were talking about, you know, you get 5-10 minutes and let's go tomorrow and blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm stereotyping them. The whole time, I'm thinking they're talking about, like, they're rappers, right? I'm thinking they're talking about, like, a rap open mic, and I could go and maybe do some poetry or whatever. So I get in there and talk to them, introduce myself, because, like I said, there's so few black people that I would introduce myself to black people if I seen any of them, I swear to. So we start talking, and they said it's comedy. I was like, oh, shit. Oh, you guys, okay, you guys going to a comedy open mic. Now, mind you, I had already had a goal to start doing comedy by itself, just comedy at comedy venues. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go with you guys. We went to this place called Ventura Harbor, and it went fairly well. Like, for my first time, I was very comfortable on stage, obviously, because I've been doing poetry and all this other shit for so many years that, we started going, like, every week or every day. I remember there was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If you wanted to do Friday, you drove to Bakersfield. Burbank, excuse me. If you want to do Friday, you go to Burbank. You want to do Monday, you go to LA. And I just went to Hollywood and started doing a couple of open mics there, but mostly in the Ventura area, and it just snowballed from there.
So you've been doing comedy at least for 2-3 years now?
Yeah, so comedy by itself, in that capacity, probably like 3 years. Like, so that was like 2018. It's actually the end of 2017. So yeah, probably about 3 years. Okay. And I don't like to always say it like that. 'Cause people are like, oh, you've only been doing it a year or two, man. You're amazing. And it's like, I didn't just start performing, but specific comedy. Yes. Hasn't been that long. It's going pretty well.
And then so from going from there, you came coming back up and stuff. You started your own show, Elephants on the Block.
Yeah, because you know what? It was a thing where people were still booking me for poetry there in Sacramento. And I would do no poetry there. Like, I did no poetry in SoCal for like a year or so that I left. I would only do poetry when I came back to Sacramento to visit. I would visit my kids when I had shows, blah, blah, blah. And I would do some poetry. So like, there was a whole year I probably performed poetry like a handful of times, which is crazy, right? And I was just doing all comedy. Now, when I came back to Sacramento, there's a transition. Now, this very popular poet is now telling jokes, right? And so some of the comedians don't realize how dope I am, or they look at me like a poet. And, I mean, I'm very confident human. I feel like I'm one of the funniest people in Sacramento. Now, maybe not one of the funniest stand-up comedians yet, because that also comes with timing and performance and experience and things like that. But just funny, like, writing style and able to off the top, like, I think I'm up there. So I started to just do comedy more at booked gigs like Banana Festival and this festival and that festival. And so a lot of the community started to look at me as a comedian, and I started to get as popular as a comedian as anything else. And that's really what took off. Because really at the comedy spots, some of those comedians, they don't get out and about and they don't know who I am. So I'm like, I'm not about to start over and prove to you when I think I'm funnier than, like, real shit, I'm an Aries. Like, I think I'm funnier than half 70, 82% of them anyway. Right. So it, for me, I just do actual book shows, paid shows at events, and I could start to get into that comedy venue when they respect where I'm at. Because they'll try to give you a 5-10 minute lead spot. You one of the funniest people on the bill, and they don't know that. You know what I'm saying? So, but the transition's happening, and that's kind of where I started doing my own show. It was funny because I did poetry at this place. I'm not going to shout them out because I don't rock with them. But I, you know, long story short, I do my show at a different venue now because that original venue is, they're frauds. They're trying to fraud artists or devalue artists and, you know, kind of manipulate, exploit artists. You know, I'm not about that. But I started by going to my buddy's show, do poetry, just poetry, 10-minute set. But like I said, I'm going to make jokes in between the poetry. And I was on fire that day. Some people had said something from the crowd, and I'm riffing off the crowd and making jokes. And so during my 10-minute poetry set, I was so funny that the lady came and asked me to host the whole comedy show she was doing. And, you know, the rest is history. Banged out 4 dope shows, elephant shows. I think they were very high quality. I actually can look back at them. They're on Vimeo now. I can actually look back at them and be entertained. So I'm super excited about the actual quality that came from it. But now we're just taking that same show, and we're in talks with the Rust Room. We're doing that same show at the Guild Theater in Sacramento, in Oak Park, Sacramento. Right. I've talked to so many people, actually even in Yuba, in Marysville, they want me to come do shows. So there's a bunch of different venues that I'll be doing different shows with after this Corona.
Okay. So it's just moving around and stuff. That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So now it'll be called like Elephant at the Guild, or Elephant at the Rust, or Elephant, you know, Elephant at wherever we're at. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Okay. So it's still a mobile show, but it's still impactful. Okay. I like that. So what made you do, I've seen your show a few times, later a lot. What made you get into doing their impersonation of Denzel?
You know, it's funny. So basically, another comedian, man. Like, I'm not really about stealing jokes and premises, but that was just another comedian. I forgot his name, man. He does this Denzel, and it's about mild sauce. It's about working at Harold's. If you've never been to Chicago, they have Harold's Chicken. He's like, what if Denzel worked at Harold's? You want some hot sauce and some mild sauce, huh? You know what I'm saying? And he gets into the Denzel. And so we would just say that. Not even being a comedian, I would just, you know, say funny things for the ladies, whoever. And I would do Denzel a lot. And so then when I started doing comedy, it's just natural to do Denzel. Now, I never do the Harold's mild chicken joke, but I'll just do Denzel. And I even was Denzel for Halloween one year. And the whole night at the party, I was doing Denzel. And so one time at Spoken Word Federation, it just came to me right before I was set to host, and I was hosting as the referee. I was like, okay, so Denzel Washington should be the referee of this. And Denzel Washington from Training Day. So as you remember, I was able to do that whole event like as Denzel Washington. And so I don't do the joke as much in my sets because it's, like I said, it's something that other comedians already did. And I want to let them live their life and don't take their, you know, their ideas. But in events and at festivals and things like that, where I can just do it playing around while I'm hosting, I do that a lot. I think it's super fun.
Most definitely. And I do remember that you put my hand up when I won against Marvin.
When I was Denzel, put your hand.
Yeah, there you did. So here's a question. What is Maximilian de Beni manifestation?
What does that mean?
Yeah, what is that about?
Oh, so Max is just a dude I used to hang out with, and one of my best friends actually from high school, and he would do video video editing and cinematography. And so he's the one who edited most of my videos. So that's just his tag. That's just his brand.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy your version of New Slave. And that was pretty nice. Like that.
Yeah, he shot New Slave, shot a couple different things. And that was just me. I rock with Kanye, especially back in the day. You rock with Kanye a little bit more. But yeah, I like New Slaves. And a lot of times when I create things, it's because I heard a new song or a new beat. And I kind of make it up like with a rhythm, like a rap kind of, and maybe turn it into a poem or a song. And so New Slaves is one of those moments where I heard the beat and I was like, man. So basically, if it's like if Kanye ever needed another hook for the remix, that would have been my hook, basically. Or that would have been my verse if he needed a verse for the remix. So that's where that poem came from.
I know that we the new slave. I know that we the new slave. I see the effects of the chains in the shit that you say. I know that we the new slave. You chained by how you think. Get a hard whip in you straight. They call washing your brain. I know that we the new slave. I know that we the new slave. And this ain't all about skin, but shout to the 60% that live their life in a cage 23 hours a day. Shout to the innocent in prison in Guantanamo Bay. I know that we the new slave. Politicians all too fake. We starving, they stuffing they face with etouffee. I know that we the new slave. I know that we the new slave. I don't know why only me and Ye going Bobby Boucher. I know that we the new slave. I see the blood on the lead. I see the blood on the lead. I know that we the new slave. I try to warn of the thorns, but you just see the bouquet. Rise and shine, open your eyes, pretty see vous play. We a slave to the money, the slave owners, the bank, and that rich 1% that don't give a fuck if you live. I know that we the new slave, and I know they proud of that shit. Yeah, cause we the new slave, but now we don't run away. I try to Harriet Tubman, but y'all just get high like fuck it. I know that we the new slave, I know that we the new slave. You still following stars, they do, you do the same. They got you to substitute, chasing freedom for fame. I know that we the new slave, I know that we the new slave.
Okay. Oh, so it isn't Kanye's it's your actual version of New Slaves.
When I'm New Slaves, yeah, I don't say anything that Kanye says.
Oh, okay.
No, that's my own piece. Obviously you haven't heard Kanye's version of New Slaves, but now he's talking about similar things though, because Kanye's focused on how, you know, the higher ups wouldn't let him, there was a ceiling basically when you start wilding out, because there was a ceiling and he realized Black man, he still couldn't have his own brand. He had to work with someone else's brand, or they wouldn't let him do his own thing. So, yeah, so it's kind of about that. It is really New Slaves. My verse is really just about how us as Blacks are, yeah, we can be considered slaves. The prison industrial complex, that can be considered slavery. But really all of the lower class is slaves as well, you know, to the upper class because of capitalism. Because how things are ran. So I just kind of, you know, made that analogy or that connection to actual slaves. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And New Slaves, that's one of the things on YouTube. Y'all want to check it out. People always come up to me and ask me to do a performance. I've never did like a one-on-one performance for anyone. What I do is say, oh, perfect. Go to YouTube if you want to hear me. So y'all go to YouTube.
Okay.
Russell Kane, New Slaves.
This is one of the parts I want to basically bring up, because we always go into this about. So, in the book, so people who write in the books, writers and stuff that write and promote books and stuff, they're known as considered as the page poets. And then people who perform the art, perform their poems or put their stuff on CDs and stuff, we call them the stage poets. And there's always been a big rip between the page versus the stage. So I'm going to ask you, Russell. What are you comfortable with? The page, the stage, or both?
I call it like a literary poet where they say, hey, I'm going to go read at Luna's, or a spoken word poet who spits. I don't read, you know what I'm saying? I literally don't read. Like if I have a new poem and I have to read it, it's anxiety for me because I can't connect with the audience, and then I have to, you know what I'm saying? So I usually do not read any poetry, and I think that's a big difference between the two. And I am a spoken word artist, and I always spit. And I'm going to or want to write a book, and I've written out my poems, but a big thing is, do I spell things? how I say them? Do I spell things with the way I want you to say them aloud? Because like I said, I'm a MC, bro. I'm a lyricist, whether it's songs or poetry, I'm a lyricist. So I want you to hear the rhyme within the rhyme and how this rhymes with that. This, you know, it has alliteration with that piece. And you know what I'm saying? So that's what I go back and forth when I do write things down for publication. It's like, you know, how do I write it so you can get the feeling that I would have gave you if I said it? I say things a certain way. I get hype a certain time in certain rooms. I get calm a certain time. I say things in the sexy voice. You know, I want you to get the experience that people get when they hear it. So I'm definitely more of a spoken word spitter.
Most definitely. And also wanted to say happy pre-Father's Day to you, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate that, man, because it's difficult having multiple babies during Corona, man.
It's difficult. You and me both trying to see the kids, and mom's like, how I know you don't got it. It's like, come on now.
Hey, yeah, same thing to you, bro. Happy pre-Father's Day, baby.
So
happy Juneteenth.
Thank you. How is your Juneteenth going?
Man, it's happy as rainbows. I'm around a lot of plants, around a lot of art. Right now I'm doing this at Classy Hippie. Shout out to Leo. And on Broadway. And so Kareem is bringing back the Reclaiming the Image of the Black Father exhibit that he did at the Brick House. I love that I get to shout out all this black entrepreneurship all in this one little story. So shout out to the Barb and the Brick House. Shout out to Kareem Daniels. And I'm checking out my picture that we did for that exhibition. So me and my kids actually have a really dope picture he took of us. We had a whole little photo shoot, and I like how it turned out. So I came here to kind of sit in the back and listen to the waterfall and do the interview with you. So it's been smooth. Earlier I was with the plant nanny at her botany, it's not her botany shop, but the botany shop she works with off of 21st and X Street. So check that out as well. Check out Plant Nanny. And so after this, I am going to go hand out stuff to the unhoused from boxes I got from Soul Collective. I'm going to get a haircut so I can be as sexy as possible before I go to Cesar Chavez Park today. And I'm going to do some poetry with that movement at 6 p.m. at Cesar Chavez Park. So I just got a lot going today. It should be a very good Juneteenth. Whole lot of black shit.
Oh, I know. I forgot one thing. You host Real Men Talk.
Oh, yeah. And thank you for bringing that up, man. I don't know how long this is going to go, but thank you for bringing that up before we left. So, yeah, I really try to be impactful, man. And it's not just me. I want to scream it to the heaven. It's me and Randall Hudson Jr. We host that and we partner with Soul Collective. Soul Collective has funded a lot of this and let us use their space and supported Real Men Talk heavy. So I always want to shout out soulcollective.org. And that's every first Sunday, Real Men Talk, us getting together and talking. The flyer might seem, you know, intimidating as far as what we're talking about, but we're literally just shooting the shit. If there's something deep to talk about, like everything going on now, we talk about it. If it's something fun to talk about, like, the Last Dance, we talk about that. And it's just a way for men to come together and congregate, fellowship and build in so many different ways. There was a cat who needed editing. Well, Soul Collective and Dom and those guys do video editing. Or, you know, we might have a younger cat that wants to be apprenticed to an older cat who does photography. All these different things we were able to talk about, bond, and build. And now we're going to have even a Real Men Talk 2020 project, an annual project that's a tangible project. So it's going to be passing out things for the unhoused and supporting the unhoused in the community with tangible products. And then each year we can have a different project. So Real Men Talk 2021 project, 2022, so on and so forth. And these could be things like backpack drives and, you know, giving inner city kids free haircuts if their parents can bring used shoes or backpacks. And that way we can give out the backpacks to these other students in need while getting those other kids a haircut and making them feel confident going to the first day of school. So things like that we've done in the past with Beckner Family Housing. And these are tangible projects that I want to incorporate with Real Men Talk as well. So every first Sunday, Real Men Talk is either going to be at Soul Collective or on Zoom. So you can follow me, Russell Cummings. You can follow Real Men Talk on IG or Facebook. or you can also follow Soul Collective on IG and Facebook, and you'll get all the information you need, because 6 p.m. every first Sunday.
Nice. I'll put the link on that stuff.
Yeah. West Coast. And gang.
Gang.
Yeah. It's been a dope experience. It's one of my favorite nights of the month. It's always been something that, you know, I leave glad that I did it.
Most definitely. So I know you're a hip hop head and stuff, so I'm gonna hit it on you. What are your top 5 rappers?
Of all time?
All time, or whatever feel for. Or now, whichever one.
Oh man. Maybe even all time might even be easier than now. Now I'm so wishy-washy. Like now, I mean, I rock with the J. Cole's and the Kendricks and those cats. I really like Chance, but lately, you know, not making exact music that I love him for. Okay, I used to like Wale as my favorite, but, you know, same kind of thing.
Let's do all time then.
Yeah. And so these are like the honorable mentions of right now. Earth Gang is really exciting to me right now. These are all honorable mentions. But all time, I would say, you know, the Pac and Biggie, it's stereotypical, but they're really, really good artists in different ways. I think Biggie was more lyrical and beautiful storytelling, but Tupac was more moving as an artist, as a message, as a feel, as a movement. If Tupac was still alive, bro, like Black people in America, I think would be better off than we were without him, just because he's that kind of energy. Jay-Z, I mean, just the longevity and the lyrical ability. I mean, if you don't like Jay-Z, if you don't say he's top 5, like, I don't even understand what genre you think hip hop is, because he's done so much on and off the track. You know what I'm saying? On and off records, from how we talk and how we think about business to how we dress to, you know. So then it gets a little, you know what I'm saying, a little tricky. I love Jadakiss as a lyricist. I really, really love Jadakiss. Eminem is probably top 10. He didn't age very well with his lyrics, so I had to bump him to top 10. So to me, who else would be in there?
So are you adding, Tupac and Biggie as 1 and 2, or just both as 1?
I would say Tupac, then probably Jay-Z, then probably Biggie to me, just because Biggie, you know, and Tupac both didn't have those number of albums. Jay-Z has so many, but still couldn't put nobody over Tupac. It's West Coast Gang Gang.
And then you got Jadakiss, and then
Jadakiss, and then, you know, that last one is kind of, it just depends on, you know, when we talk. I think Kendrick has an ability to get there. I think a lot of people have ability to get to that last slot. It used to be Eminem, but like I said, I would bump him more top 10.
I try to go 5 because I know people always have that issue with the 10. Like, oh man, I got too many on me. But
it's a very indecisive list. So I rock with Method Man top 10, but it's hard to say who that fifth person would be. It'd be like basically a revolving wheel, depending on how I felt at the time.
Most definitely. So just knowing that you are a well-built worldwide entertainer. That's one good thing. What would you like to tell the world out there? I mean, you've been entertaining as a dancer, a host, poet, a musician. I mean, you've just done a lot. So what would you like to tell? What would be the overall tell of what you want to say for Russell Cummings to people?
Yeah, man. I look at that too, and I'm like, man, should I just focus on one thing? Or if I could do all these things, why would I not do them? You know, and comedy is one of my favorite things, because laughing is basically so therapeutic. And then my newest thing I've been doing, like you said, I've been making music. I've been making songs where I get somebody to play a beat, or I get the band to make an impromptu beat, and we're able to make really, really good songs. So I want to make a mixtape, man. And my next goal is to be good enough just to do concerts in the park as a musician, and then I'll quit. I quit my music career. I just want to be able to say, hey, I've been able to be a professional host, professional comedian, a professional like mentor speaker at a conference. I've been able to be a professional dancer, a professional poet. I've been able to do these things good enough where people invite me and pay me to their events to do them. And I'm really proud of that, man. And so what I would tell people is, don't waste your abilities. Whatever thing you do, man, do it. Especially in this time, in this world, capitalistic world we live in, man. If you can make money and profit off of your gifts, do that. If not, if you can just share it and make the world better off your gifts, do that. Because that's all I've been doing. I was good at certain things, and I had the opportunity to practice them and kind of perfect them at least enough to be able to spread them with the world. So that's my message, man. Just, you know, my umi says, shine your light on the world. Right? That's one of my favorite jams. And yeah, most definitely, you know what I'm saying? So just shine that light and continue to support specifically Sacramento. There's a lot of dope people that are doing amazing things, and it could be bigger and better with the support. If we invest our time and our money into these things, we need to make sure that the community shows up and makes these things worthwhile and are, we're able to grow. Because a lot of times people talk about how whack their city are. This city is, but if you be the reason it's whack. The people saying that are the reason that it's whack. You know what I'm saying? Sharon, you do a lot, you know what I'm saying, with Sacramento Poetry Center and with the different, I've seen you at a bunch of different events, and you do sound and you do this and that. So you already know how many different things there are to do, because we be busy. So just come out and support. So it's two parts. One, shining a light. And the second, receive some of that light. Some of y'all are living in a dark place. You in the house all the time. Come out and soak up the vibe. Soak up the sun. Soak up the art around you. Because it's one of the most therapeutic things in the world. I've never, you know, seen someone unhappy after one of my elephant shows. Or after one of my mahogany show. Even if it's a deep poetry night, I'm bringing joy. And it's valuable stuff. So I've never seen someone that just isn't, you know, relieved. It's like our church, you know. So that would be my message to the world. Shine your light and then absorb some of that shit too.
Most definitely. Yo, you have any upcoming shows coming up?
I'm actually, the Cesar Chavez joint is today, so it's probably too late for people to rock with that. But really, I don't want to personally be the reason why people come to places and if they were to get sick. So I'm not doing too much marketing on my shows, but look out for Real Men Talk. I'm being conservative on bringing back my shows. But look out for Elephant. Elephant's going to be at the Guild Theater when things kind of, like I said, calm down. I'm not too thirsty to throw one of my shows, but I will be out and about at other people's shows. So look for me. You can follow me at Russell Cummings 8 on IG, just Russell Cummings on Facebook. And when things calm down, though, I will be at the Rush Room doing a show. I want to do a ladies' night there. I got to talk to the owner. I want to do a couple things there. I'll be, like I said, in Yuba, Marysville. Look for me. And especially at the Guild Theater, we're going to jam. Mahogany Poetry, when things get back to normal, will be every Wednesday around 9:30, 10 o'clock Wednesday nights after the venue is closed. It's at Queen Sheba Restaurant. Shout out to Zion and check out Queen Sheba. Please support her during this time. Pickups are available.
Most definitely.
Like a little infomercial, man. You see me? You hear me?
I got you. I forgot. You used to do the chocolate, what was it, Chocolate Love?
I think you're talking about Black Cupid. I did Black Cupid. I want to bring that back, man, because like I said, if you can use your abilities for good, I always thought how dope it would be if I did this annual thing called Black Cupid, and it was like a date night, because Black people find it hard to date Black people in this area, especially Black women. Some of you dudes better get it together and appreciate these Black women, because they're amazing. But yeah, so I just want to bring people together. Not only Black, anybody could come, you know what I'm saying? I'm just the chocolate god, so I call it Black Cupid. But yeah, that's something I'm going to bring back, and it would be so dope to really connect people. And then Black Cupid was not only a date night, but it was also, you know, it was speed dating. So if I was to connect someone, we can come back next year as a couple. And keep coming back. It could be like an annual thing. It'd be like, oh, we are in love because of Russell's Black Cupid. That's what I need, Teron. I need that on my resume.
Nice. Most definitely, man. But now I want to give you all my love and guidance, man. You basically are doing it big and stuff and keep on doing it. And I'll see you on the other side of this some COVID thing. But you keep being you, man. All right.
Man, I really appreciate you, man. This was a dope podcast, dope interview. You can bust it out with the Black Cupid and everything, man. So I appreciate you doing your homework. I've been doing so much stuff, man. So the last thing I'll say is, you know, tap in, be a part of the movement, because there will be people who criticize what you're doing for the cause. If you don't know what I do for the cause, you're not paying attention. That don't got nothing to do with me. That's a you problem. So tap into the people that you hear doing things. Follow them. Get with them, come to events so you can see what we're doing, because it's not really on us to brag or to you know, shout out everything we do. We do a lot of good stuff, man. So I'm thanking you for bringing some of that to the light. I really appreciate you, family. All love, man, and I can't wait to see you again.
Well, definitely. And yeah, like you said, tap in, folks, and let it be known. This is Russell Cummings. Get with him. And y'all put all the information on the site, on the site and everything. All right. All right. Take care, Russell, man.
Thanks, man.
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.